welcome everyone to the second episode of the Creative Ambitions podcast. On today's episode, we have Kelly Moon. Kelly Moon is a comedic sketch writer, professional improviser, performer, house teams director, improv coach, teacher, and actor. She is best known for performing on Improv Asylum's main stage cast and can also be found on TikTok with her sketch writing team, Late to the Party TV. During my conversation with Kelly, we dove right into her most recent trip to New York and just some of the emotions that she went through while visiting. You'll find out. She grew up in the New England area and then moved to the South around the age of 10 years old. She was only there for about a year before she moved back to New England. And at this point in the conversation, we then get into just some really fun childhood stories that she has and just how she started to move towards a career in acting. Guys, when I first asked Kelly to be on this episode, it was 1 a.m. She had just gotten done performing and she's trying to catch a train. I literally ran out of the theater, sprinted after her, dropped my phone, cracked the back, didn't care, crossed multiple intersections and was huffing and puffing by the time I caught up to her. And I was like, oh, Kelly, can you hear me on my podcast? And she just starts laughing at me and she's like, yeah, of course. I am just so excited to have all of you kind of listen to this conversation. I've looked up to Kelly for probably as long as I've worked at the theater. She has a quality to her writing and her performing that a lot of people have definitely talked about. She is just such a wonderful performer and fantastic person. So to have her on, you know, have her on one of the first few episodes was such a treat. And I'm really excited for you guys to get to know Kelly Moon a little bit more. But here is my conversation with Kelly. Kelly, you've had a lot going on.
I've had a busy year.
For those of you listening that may not know of Kelly Moon, she's a performer. She's a great person. She's funny as fudge. She just got back from a showcase in New York where some SNL writers were. How'd it go?
It was so good. So much fun. One of the best experiences I've ever experienced. I want me to tell you like all about it.
Yeah, just kind of some of the things that you took away from it, things that, you know, you might be really proud of that happened or things that you might be excited for in the future, just anything and everything.
Yeah, sure. So we went down there for like 2 days-ish. We were all very like nervous and excited. And by like we all, it was like 14 or so of us, like half of us from Boston, half of us from New York. And we went down, we did like a tech rehearsal and then a dress rehearsal.
It was the, was it the main stage for both Boston and Improv New York?
So there isn't technically like a main stage right now, but there was in the past and like a few people from that main stage cast did audition. And then like other like people who have performed at Asylum New York before were invited to perform. Yeah, because some of them like do like one-off shows, and it was fun to meet those people and everything. One of the girls actually like made it all the way to like Studio 8H and had an interview with Lorne Michaels once.
Oh, really?
Her name is Jess Elgin. She's so funny. Look her up on Insta.
Jess Elgin, you got it.
Jess Elgin. But yeah. So I was the last to go on the whole roster. So the whole night I just was like taking in like everybody's like emotions and nervous energy, and just once everybody like finished their set, like you could tell that they were like relieved and were riding the high of the showcase and the adrenaline of it all. So I just felt like all of those like emotions were just like piling on top of me like the whole night.
You're like shaking.
And I was, yeah, it was very nerve-wracking. And like the house was full. There was like 120-ish seats, and the producers like sat in the back of the theater, probably because they didn't want to intimidate any of
us. Yeah, just hide in the dark, please.
Yeah. And we didn't know like who was gonna come from the producer team, but we found out like after the fact that it was like Steve Higgins, who is a longtime producer of SNL and The Tonight Show. His son is a part of Please Don't Destroy, I believe his name's John Higgins.
Okay. To look into him.
Yeah, look him up. So yeah, he's like also a writer for SNL.
I love writers.
But yeah, it was a fun time. Everybody honestly did so well. Like the crowd was so like giving and like on board for the whole thing. I feel like it wasn't their first rodeo. You know what I mean? I feel like everybody in the audience was like, you know, comedy nerds or
just people like kind of with a performance deal.
Yes,
in a sense.
Yeah, it was very like supportive. So I go on and I've auditioned for a lot of things in my life.
Yeah.
especially since I come from like a theater school background. We used to do like competitions all the time, and you had to like have like a specific package to showcase yourself. So like I chose things that like I thought would showcase like all aspects of myself. So from a character that like was possessed by six different spirits, I like showcasing like rapid fire characters, and I did of course my aquarium character since I worked at the aquarium for 7 years. I was like, I gotta do an aquarium thing.
So funny when you put in those Billy Bob teeth.
I know. And then I did my self-driving car grandma, and honestly like the reaction of the crowd just like it made my spirit soar, and I felt like I'm supposed to be doing this.
Yeah,
I feel so actualized, and
I love that.
And then, but the minute I stepped off stage and like my set was done, I like bawled my eyes out because I was so overwhelmed with just the pressure of it all and everybody's emotions, and because I was the last to go, I just felt like such a relief that I just like cried. And it was also tears of like happiness and gratitude and
just like the whole nine yards that kind of comes with it.
Yeah, it was so fun.
I love that. I mean, watching you perform on the main stage, just to give context, I'm sure I probably mentioned this in the intro, but Kelly is a main stage performer at Improv Asylum. She does such a good job. Some of the sketches that she's written, I still quote to her to this day. Kelly is fantastic. She has a lot of talent up her sleeve. Having, like, honestly, going back to our conversation, like, having the opportunity to work at a comedy theater that had some hiccups, like when I first started, like those couple weeks, and then to see how just the whole theater interacts like very well with one another, and to hear some of these opportunities that have been coming to you guys just on the main stage. Like somebody that works here was talking about having the main stage do the showcase for some SNL producers is like one of the best things that's happened for the company. And there was another worker that was like, no, I think opening up like the New York theater was the best. And in the back of my mind, I wanted to be like, shut the fuck up. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened. Like, you guys are also talented. You work so great together. It was so, so wonderful to hear that you guys had this opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you only like dream about. And when you do like the research, like they only go to like certain theaters, and I feel like ever since the pandemic, we've been more of a just like a whisper to them because of like the amount of theaters that got shut down, and we like miraculously made it out alive. So I think
it's because they're talented, everybody.
yeah. I mean, I think there's a reason why we made it out alive, not only because like we have smart business practices, but also we're like resilient performers and really care about the art of it all versus like the money. And yeah, and I mean, to go off of what you said about like the best thing that happened for the company, it really is like a matter of what your like perspective is, I guess. I don't know if this will be like the best thing for the company. Maybe if one of us like hits SNL.
Well, I think just to cut you off, sorry, but I think it's only going to go up from there.
Right. And why wouldn't it, right?
It's like a seed.
Yeah, it's just a little seed.
Getting planted,
yeah.
Getting some roots in some different areas. Yeah. You never know when hurricane season's
exactly
coming. You got to have some serious branches and roots and nooks and crannies.
I know. So, I don't know. Who knows? I did get reached out to by a New York manager from the showcase.
These are the moments that I wish that I was, like, recording a video, because my hands are so tight right now and my eyes are, just daggering out of my head. That is so incredible.
So cool. Yeah, she, like, called me, like, right away. She stalked me online and, like, found my website. And I thank God I put a website on.
You do?
Online. I do have a website. It's haphazard, but it's something. And she reached out. She's very, like, interested in me. And she, like, asked me to, like, send my set to her so she can show the company and basically sell me to them, probably.
Oh, my God. Is it SNL? Is that the company that we
No, it's not SNL.
Are you sure? Because you do belong there.
It's a different, like, kind of, like, talent. Not agency, but, like...
Recruiters?
It's something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
but yeah.
Amazing.
If anything, like, that's a fun thing to come out of it and an exciting opportunity.
Totally.
But yeah, I don't know the timeline for this SNL business.
Well, but that's okay. Let's do this. You were a baby once.
I was a baby.
Where
once.
Were you a baby? Where?
Okay. So mainly I grew up in the New England area. I was a baby. Where was I a baby? I want to say, like, most of my, like, childhood from, like, baby to, what age was I? 10 years old. I lived in Londonderry, New Hampshire.
What?
Yes.
That's right down the street from me. Are you fucking kidding
me? I grew up in Londonderry, New Hampshire. I loved Londonderry. I lived in, like, this, like, subdivision with just, like, a bunch of trees. And I had a pond in my backyard. It was, like, the best.
I feel like I lived there.
You probably, I mean.
Did you go to Apple Tree?
Yes.
It's an AMC theater now. It still smells weird, but.
Did you go to Max Apples?
Which one? There's, like, five. So many different ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So I lived there for a while. And then my dad had, like, a midlife crisis and he moved us all to Florida.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which part?
We lived in Claremont, which is the most desolate of all the Florida towns. It was, like, near Orlando.
Okay, then.
I want to say 20 minutes from Orlando.
Okay. Thank you for the context.
Yeah, he just, like, thought... I think he just glorifies Florida and the warm weather and everything. And my dad actually got a job at Disney and was the safari driver for Animal Kingdom.
Oh, my gosh.
For a while.
I wonder if he was my safari driver when I went.
Maybe. That would be crazy.
Might have happened. That's... Wow.
But I didn't like Florida. I think it was a huge culture shock for me.
Yeah.
The South, I was not used to.
How long were you in Florida for?
Just a little under a year.
Oh, okay. So enough of an experience to know that you're done.
Exactly. Yeah. I think, like, most of my family was like, we're done with Florida. We want to go back to New England.
Yeah.
Because we miss it. And I also didn't have a lot of friends. It was a hard moment in time for me.
Oh, hey guys. Sorry to interrupt the interview. Some Southerner needs to say something.
Hey, y'all, it's Reverend Joshua James Buttface here, and I'm here to tell you about my podcast called Christ is Love, because that's what he is, and that's what the podcast is about. Because I feel like Christ's name has been weaponized socially and politically, but not on my podcast. He's all love. Now, that being said, if you're one of the commenters who wants to come over to my page and make fun of my last name, then I pray to God that he strikes you down with an almighty fury, because Buttface has been in my family's name for generations, and you're trying to destroy my family, you're trying to destroy my faith, and you're just trying to destroy America. Get me all fries. I swear to God, I pray that God puts principalities in your way if you comment things like, wow, he looks like a Buttface too, or things like, I hope this guy kills himself. That's not okay, and Christ will kill you. So please listen to my podcast.
And now back to our conversation with Kelly.
So then we kind of like, we convinced my dad to like move back to New England. But instead of Londonderry, we moved in with my grandparents who live in Wilmington, Massachusetts.
Whoop, whoop.
Yes. So we moved in with them
Wait,
for a
Wilmington's
while.
Wilmington's like bougie. No, I'm lying. No. I'm lying. I'm thinking of this this town that my dermatologist's office is in. There's like mansions and mansions there.
It's probably another W.
Probably.
Town. Back. To Westford.
It sounds right. I got to look up Dr. Fergala, anybody. If you're listening to this, it's that town that she's in Massachusetts.
But Wilmington has more of like a, I don't know, middle class vibe. Are you familiar with like Tewksbury?
Yep.
America?
I'm actually a little bit familiar with Wilmington. I used to drop off deposits there.
Oh.
Yeah. I worked in Woburn, Mass.
Oh, yes.
For Vitamin Shop Company.
Most of my like extended family is from Woburn.
Yeah. I considered living there, but then I realized that way back in the day there was some water issues, and I was like, I can't trust that. I'm a granola. I need my water.
You need your water.
I need that. I need that good, pristine Poland spring.
I love Poland spring.
I love it. I love the way it crushes in your hand.
It's the best kind of water.
I'm so thirsty.
But anyways,
after that.
So from then on, we stayed in Wilmington. We got a townhouse ourselves, and I went to middle school and high school there. And so I always say to people I grew up in Wilmington because that's like the most, long-term place I've lived.
Okay.
So
I like that. It's really cool to know that you grew up in Londonderry.
Londonderry, yeah.
We'll talk about that more often. We're going through middle school and high school now.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, did you know that you were interested or maybe you were going to pursue the arts?
Yeah, I feel like I always knew since like second grade.
She said that with the most dead serious face, everyone.
I did. I can like pinpoint like that far that I knew that I was interested in this kind of stuff. But middle school, I think like that move to Florida kind of made me go back into my shell a little, because I felt very, very, very vulnerable moving again and being the new girl again. So I kind of like, I was more shy in middle school and reserved and nerdy and I just wanted to like
A little bit more introverted, you mean?
I was more introverted and I wanted to keep a low profile. So I didn't really like express myself in that way until high school.
Till
freshman year of high school, and I like did all of the plays in high school.
All of them?
Not all of them. I think sophomore year is when I did all of them up until, sophomore to senior year.
Okay.
Because as a freshman, I only took, like, the theater classes. And then my teacher was like, you have to audition.
You're so talented.
He kind of, like, pushed me to, like, take it to the next level during that age. So I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Because especially as a freshman, I, like, ruled at improv, like in the classes. I was like
just too good.
I was too good. I was so good, Angela. As like, and without any improv training at all. Yeah. Like
it's almost like it was you before you knew it was you.
Yeah. Yeah. And during like that time I was like in my mind, I was like, I'm gonna do this for a living one day. Like, specifically improv. I, like, knew I was going
to
do it.
That's actually really interesting to me. Because a lot of people, when they pursue just the arts in general, it's like musician, acting, or, I don't know, call me like an author or writer. And improv is something that I didn't really understand until I saw TED 2.
TED 2?
Yeah. And they just start ripping on the improvisers there. And they're like,
oh my God.
They're like, we need like a time, you know, something that happened in history. What's that event? And they're like, 9/11. That's when I got introduced to improv. And I was like, that
oh my
like
God.
Shit.
Not even like Whose Line?
Okay, you got me. I lied. But so Whose Line, that was just like, that was just something I watched like for fun. It was almost like a sitcom show. Mm-hmm. But then when TED 2 came out and they had like that whole scene, I was like, absolutely not. I'm never doing improv. But I don't know, fast forward and I turned 29 and I was like, I really, like I need to do something. And improv was the first thing that I looked up and I've been hooked like a really big fish ever since that.
It really is a drug in a way. I remember, so back to Londonderry.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom used to catch me at 2 a.m. as like an 8-year-old watching Whose Line.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And she would be so mad because it would be like that late.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Did you have a favorite character or just like performer on Whose Line?
Yeah, Colin Mochrie.
Which one was he?
He was the bald one.
Did he have like
that the face you're making is yeah.
That's him. Okay.
And Ryan Stiles. I liked they were like a duo.
What a good call out. Thank you for humbling me, Kelly. that was such a great show.
I loved everybody on that show though. They were so good.
Yeah. I just love that improv was, you know, like it was like that specific from the get go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you used to, other than like Whose Line was it anyway, did you ever have any other, like were you introduced to improv in any other sense apart from school and Whose Line? I wonder if a better way of putting this is did you like naturally do things in your life that you can see kind of like put you on that trajectory of improvising like before you were in your freshman improv team or class?
I mean, I never did anything with it probably prior to my freshman year of high school. I think I just liked pretending in general. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I think I just gravitated towards like comedy. And I mean, my dad's a big comedy buff. He would like make us watch like all the Three Stooges videos and like all of the National Lampoon stuff and
oh yes.
One of my favorites is the Coneheads.
Oh my God. I heard you talking about this recently actually at the theater. I was like, what is this?
I was intrigued by the Coneheads at a young age. I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like as a kid.
I felt the opposite. I was like, I am freaked out by this. I don't want to watch this.
Well, I think I also was freaked out, but I like liked that I was freaked out by it. I was like, this is intriguing to me.
That kind of makes me think of, it was like 2 or 3 shows ago when you guys were doing, Kelly has in multiple shows done a rendition of like a corpse or some kind of possessed person. And I didn't know your spine could twist like this, but that character for that sketch, it was Thriller. The song was at the end.
Yeah, my ice cream funeral.
Did you write that?
I did write that. Yeah.
So that character seems to be somebody that comes out in moments, like even like during improv or excuse me, just like your all improv scenes and not your sketch work. Do you know where she comes from?
I do not. I mean, to go back to my sketch ice cream funeral, it came from the idea that we all get like triggered by the ice cream truck sound.
It's so true.
And to me, that is like a possession in and of itself. So I just think like truth and comedy, a lot of things in life everyone gets possessed by. So I use that a lot in my comedy.
It's absolutely beautiful. So beautiful. I love it.
A lot of people get possessed. Either it's from like being inspired by something or, you know, obsessions, whatnot, you know? So that's a character that resonates with me because I get hyperfixated on things all the time.
Yeah, I totally get that. I was kind of wondering if maybe the Coneheads was like the era that it came from.
Oh, maybe. I mean, I've always been told like that I have a certain like old-fashioned style to my comedy, which I love.
Yep.
Because I do feel like I am inspired by oldies but goodies.
Yeah.
And I don't want that style to die, necessarily.
Maybe some of the context.
Some of the context, for sure.
Yeah, but, like, the delivery mode.
But the delivery, like, is what I want to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I just got a knock at the door. Kelly's dad is here.
Hey there. Kelly Moon's father here, Kenny Moon. Just wanted to pop by the podcast studio to give a quick disclaimer. I cannot be held responsible for how weird my little Kiki's sense of humor is. You know, I have a lot of family members asking me, hey, why is your daughter's comedy so left of center? Why is it so obviously not trying to be mainstream? Why is it so loud? And you know what? I cannot be blamed for all of my kids' actions, right? Like, I tried to move her to a very normal place like Florida with sunshine, and she chose to stay inside all day and watch Coneheads. And I love her for it. I do. I do love her. I love her. It's just that I've never done anything weird in my life. All right, now back to my sweet little girl.
And now back to our conversation with Kelly. Where did where'd you go to college?
I went to Salem State University.
And Salem State University, when you were taking classes there, I graduated with a public health degree. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. When it came to, you know, going to theater school, was there a specific niche or an area of theater that you got to study that helped you kind of grow the skills that you have, you know, to this day?
So mine, I went for theater performance, which is like a general theater degree. And I also got a minor in secondary education.
Okay.
And I didn't do like the BFA track. I did the BA track.
Okay.
Because my parents kind of scared me that I wouldn't be able to like get a job right out of college with a just theater degree. So I was kind of like forced to get something a little extra just for that cushion. And throughout my whole like college experience, like my dad was trying to convince me to get like a computer science degree too.
Oh my.
And I tried. I did try.
Really?
Yes. I took like 3 computer science classes. All boys, mind you. I was the only girl.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand a lick of it. I mean, I tried, but it came to a point where I was like, I don't care what's going on. And I'd flirt with the boys to give me answers. And they did. They loved me. The boys loved me.
Using those natural improvising skills.
Yeah, I was like, David, what's number 3?
Yeah, it makes me think of that song that you posted recently, and it's like Super Modern Girl or something.
Oh, yeah, Super Ultra Modern Girl from Chapel Road.
Need that song shoved up my ass.
I do. It's not loud enough. But yeah, so I did like a general theater performance degree, and, you know, it wasn't just comedy, of course. It was, you know, all different kinds of theater that you learned, stylized stuff, as well as, you know, more modern takes on things. We, of course, rolled around on the floor a lot.
What is it?
We rolled around on the floor a lot.
You did?
Yeah. A lot of our movement classes were, like, very
contemporary movement rolling.
It was a lot of like, you need to like move your body to
understand your ethics.
Understand like your trauma in your bones so that your character can, you know, be a part of your I don't know. It was a lot of mumbo jumbo. And a part of me like always I hate to say this, but I always kind of like mocked it a little bit.
Can't blame you.
Thus me going into comedy like as my like main track, because I was like, I can't do all this, like everyone's taking themselves too seriously.
It's so true, but those are usually the people that don't have a lot going on.
I know.
I can attest to that.
So I also like auditioned for my college like improv troupe.
Oh, okay, great.
Which I was like really nervous about, because I was like, I really wanted to be on it. And I was like, what if I don't get it? I'll have like an identity crisis about it. And I got on, thankfully, with my charm and wits. But I would say like the first year of my college experience was a little difficult, because I was kind of like anti like theater mumbo jumbo.
You were.
Yeah. And by like the second year, I kind of was like, well, if I can't beat him, I'll join him. And I like leaned into it a little bit more.
Okay.
And then I started to get into like all of my college productions. And yeah, I did some funny stuff. I did some Shakespeare. I did some not so funny stuff that when my parents went to, they were like, why? What did I just watch?
Oh, no. Was that like their introduction to your just performing?
I mean, I did like high school productions too. My first role in high school was Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream.
Puck?
Yeah, my favorite role.
I've heard you talk about this actually.
Yeah, so I think that was their first show that they saw me in. But of course, like when you go to college, like the themes are more advanced and mature. So they were kind of like,
oh yeah.
They lean on more of the conservative side.
That makes sense. You're like, this is a clitoris.
So they were shocked by like what kind of theater was going on. They were more like, why can't we do like musicals and like Hello Dolly?
Yeah.
And honestly, like I'm like, yeah, you, me, and both, Mom.
Where's the Winter Wonderland musical?
Yeah, yeah. You and me both, Mom. I also want to do something fun. But I had a good time. I was, like, nominated to go to, like, theater festivals.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
When you get nominated to go to these festivals, does that mean that you're auditioning for, like, a performance team that travels, or...?
So it's like it's an individual. It's basically like a showcase.
Okay.
But in this case, you don't like write your own stuff. You perform like monologues from plays.
Okay.
And scenes from plays with like a partner. And I think if I remember correctly, it was like two contrasting scenes.
Okay.
And one monologue.
Okay.
Yeah. So I kind of like it. This past SNL showcase kind of reminded me of those festivals, because I've done three of those. I never like made it past any round, mostly probably because I didn't take it seriously.
You were like, why am I actually here?
I don't think I took any of them seriously. I was like, I don't. And I think the judges could tell that I was like, ugh, I have to perform like a dramatic scene for you. But I did learn how to cry on command.
I think you started getting into that with me one night when, I think it was when I got casted for your inaugural team on House Teams.
Psychic Babies?
Yeah, I love that you remember that. I remember talking to you about some of the people that... Actually, I was probably still an usher. I was, I came up to you when you were, you know, just straight shooting for the back. And I was like, Kelly, Kelly! I was like, I'm so sorry, but do you have anybody that you would like recommend for like, you know, comedic talent that you look up to? And you were like, yeah. And then I do space on some of the names, but I remember you holding your hand up in front of your face and you looking at it and being like, you have to like really feel what it is that your character's feeling. And if you can put your face in a way that, you know, reflects crying, like you might, like you can feel like your body emotionally changed to like want to cry.
Yeah.
And I started doing it and I was like, I gotta go. So that was really cool advice to get.
Yeah. I did learn that in theater school. Yeah. That was one of the things I did.
How quick can you cry?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe if I try, hold on. Is it working?
It is. It's not. I'm staring too intently.
I think you need like a, because I've cried in like scenes in theater shows before, but you need to like have like a scene where it calls for it.
I don't know if Kelly has like a mic hooked up to her, but here's David.
Hey there, I'm David Moriarty, and if you're enjoying this podcast with Kelly Moon, you might enjoy my podcast called When the Mood Hits Your Eye. It's a podcast following the rise and the career of one Kelly Moon. I took a computer class with Kelly Moon back in the day, and boy, did we have chemistry. I remember making her laugh one time, and she laughed so hard, she flew back and accidentally stuck a pencil in my eye. And as I was being taken to the hospital, I said, "Please, my love, take all my answers." And she did. And she took my heart. So if Kelly is listening to this, please reach out. I feel like there's more computer science of the heart for you and I to study together.
And now back to our conversation with Kelly. Do you give yourself some mental prep time, mental warm-up time to get into maybe the mood? Make it a little bit quicker
for like theater or for improv?
Let's go with theater first and then we'll jump in improv.
Yeah, I think like it's important to like warm up your instrument, especially voice and body and mind. I mean, for mind, I always go back to like being in the moment and breathing in the moment. Meditation's very important in improv, to be in the moment and not think about what you think is funny or what your next line should be, but rather just believe that whatever comes out is the right thing.
When I first started doing improv, I think it was a lot easier because I didn't have all these rules that were in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the more I got used to it and the more I started seeing some of these other just extremely talented folks around me working, I was like, I don't know how I'm able to live up to what it is that you're putting down.
And I totally get that.
That just caused like a spiral for me that was, it was nothing on anybody else. It was everything to do with me and just kind of getting used to the space that I had to fill up, but in a more,
yeah,
like, how do I put it? Like, you had to articulate what was going on and you had to bring the audience from, I love that you talk from a, like the idea of like A to C humor, where like, you know, you start off with like, fucking, let's just say like a cat or like a kitten. It goes from a kitten to a cat to like an old lady that, you know, can't cross the road. Yeah, exactly. Kelly's was better. I always loved when you talked about that because it's not something I have. I am a one line kind of girl. I'm a Canadian crosser that doesn't know how to cross the street. But it's something that I really love working on because I can see everybody around me doing it. And if it's not three beats of comedy within that scene of dialogue, it's usually like tag out scenes or sweeps or like sweeps within a Spokane, I'll say, that can get you there. Yeah, I was like, the more rules that I learned, the more I kind of like lost my deal because I was thinking more so about what would be best for everyone else when what was best for everyone else is really just me shutting off and being in the moment. I mean, you've seen me struggle with this, but You gave me advice, or not even like advice that one time, but I would ask you, like, how do you do it? Like, how do you get over, I guess, like kind of like that insecurity that may come up, like mm-hmm. scene to scene or just day to day? You basically told me you kind of like gloss over.
Mm-hmm.
And you just really like pay attention to what it is that your scene partner is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And you just feel it
mm-hmm.
and then say it.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, was that cool.
But like, I will tell you, like, it's very common once you start like training in improv to feel that way and to feel like in your head about all these rules and remembering all these anecdotes that you're probably getting from all these coaches. I remember when I was on house teams, like there was like a moment where I just felt like I was like the worst improviser ever, and I wasn't getting anything right, and I was also in my head. But then, like, once you push through that and you start to like allow yourself to have more fun and really like listening to those notes, and really they will automatically click one day for you, and they'll just be in your heart, and you won't have to think at all about the rules. They'll just be there, and you'll like have that kind of muscle memory of certain scenarios and situations where you're like, oh, you know, your brain's already going to certain places because it's been trained over and over and bashed into your brain, right? So all I can say is just like keep doing it, because one day you will feel like, oh, I can do this with my eyes closed.
Yeah. One of my biggest things that I wanted to work on was tag outs.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've hung out in the pocket so long, I finally know when to tag out. And like,
yeah.
And like, just, it's great having certain people in the Improv Asylum community, because a lot of them have been doing this since high school.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
do a really good job realizing when I need them to sweep me out. I'm like, I got one line, guys. I got one facial expression. Sweep me out. Shout out to everybody that I've been working with, but yeah, improv is,
I didn't learn improv, like, really how to do, like, edits and tag outs and, like, long form improv until I got here.
Yeah.
To Improv Asylum, because my experience with it was mostly just, like, games and short form.
Yeah.
And, like, literally, like, your whole goal is just the game of like, ding or, like, what ding. Else did we do? Sorry, say it again.
Say it again. Six pack.
We did other ones. We did like dumb ones in college.
Yeah.
That are just like warm ups for audiences. And they're probably like, this isn't improv. This is just a warm up game.
Do you have a favorite warm up game do you have a favorite warm-up game for classes that you might like to conduct?
I usually do, for, like, the lower levels, I'll do whoosh, and we pass around a ball of energy.
Ooh.
And then it, like, I add more, like, words, because, like, when you say bang, it goes in the different direction.
Yeah.
And then pow is, like, it can go across the circle. And then I just, like, keep adding ones. And, like, sometimes I make up a few and no one knows. what else?
Yeah, that game to me is, I've played it, but we use different words.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Misty Vista.
Oh, that's a different one I taught you.
Yeah. Oh.
That's a different one I taught you.
Just kidding. Thanks for keeping me humble.
That one's more of a tongue twister. Misty Vista, Mr. Whiskers.
There's a lot of running.
A lot of running in that.
A lot of duck, duck, goose kind of vibe. Yeah, that's a fun one. I love Boom Some Knowledge.
That's a good one.
God. I always end up jumping in the circle. So we've kind of gone over, you know, some of the stuff that you've done in terms of, like, how you've grown in like the theater world,
mm-hmm.
and maybe kind of how it brought you into a trajectory with your comedic world.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you're very well known for, and even before, you know, you've been working at IA, you've been writing sketches and performing them on, you know, various places on social media, When it comes to some of the sketches that you write, somebody that works at the theater, Emily Finnegan, huge shout out. You are a wonderful human being. Emily makes a great point. She's brought this up with me before and maybe you, but you have like a certain pacing and beat when it comes to your sketches and the way that you deliver your dialogue and kind of like the energy that you have. When it comes to, I guess when it comes to your like sketch writing process, do you have like a routine that you use when you're kind of getting yourself in the mode to write up these characters or like these sketches that we see performed, you know, either on social media or on the main stage?
Yeah, I feel like I take a lot of inspiration from life. So whenever I feel inspired by something or I you know, somehow have like a moment of like genius or whatever, what I think is genius, I will always just write it in my phone, in my notes app.
Yep.
So I just like have, you know, and some of them are bad ideas. Some of them have brought me to write a lot of my sketches.
Yep.
And they can be like paragraphs or just like sentences or just like a, you know, a sampling.
Kelly just showed me some of her notes. And she does have lines.
Yeah.
So are those like,
it just like goes forever.
Are these ideas for sketches? Or are they like maybe lines of dialogue?
Some of them are lines of dialogue. Some of them are just like an experience I had. Or what am I trying to say? Or comparisons. Like, I have people on a whale watch or just peeping toms for whales, like that, like stuff like that, like you like
yeah
just ideas like that. That's so dumb, but who knows, maybe that can turn into a sketch.
Okay.
And then I'll take those tidbits and then I'll start to try to write out a sketch.
Okay.
And of course a sketch, like, you always want to have at least 3 beats, if not like 5. And you also like want the sketch to, you want every line to be an opportunity for a joke. So, and I've learned a lot over the years by like watching a lot of sketch and people like coaching my sketches as well. Cause like a lot of times it's like the point of view that is what matters and the relationship at hand, just like improv.
Yep.
And I try to like take inspiration from like the world as well, so like whatever is like relevant in the moment. I remember like writing that sketch about like intrusive thoughts at the dentist.
God, how could I forget that? That was so good. I won't lie, I hated Griff's line with the fart jar, but I always laughed.
He improvised that.
Oh, God. Every time I would laugh. I don't know why. You grabbing his tits.
And then I wrote, oh, James also helped me with that sketch as well.
So good.
Because we did like this assignment where we like write the first half of a sketch.
Yeah.
And then we give it to someone and they finish it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So in process, we'll do a lot of that.
Yeah.
A lot of collaboration like that.
Yep.
If we're like feeling like lost or like we're having like tunnel vision about a sketch, we can only see it going one way. Yep. But if you like give it to somebody else, they could probably like have a different point of view on it as well. What else? Oh, I also like, my boyfriend is also a big inspiration for my sketches.
I love your COVID episode
too. I think I like take a lot of inspo from life, and you know, same with like my signs sketch. Like my mom and I always like say like it's a sign. But I wanted to put it in a context where it was like blown out of proportion, and that's also like an important sketch thing, is like taking something that everybody's saying and then putting in a situation you wouldn't normally see it in.
Yeah, you've mentioned this. I don't think I mentioned this earlier for all of you listeners, but Kelly was my coach for house teams for 2 straight runs. So I got to take in a lot of her point of view when it comes to just improv in general. But something that made me think about what you just said, with improv, you need to... I'm sorry, Mona, I just forgot. What did you just say?
I don't remember.
Right?
What did I just say?
I just blacked out. Right when I was like, oh, I got to tell people that, you know, I've been listening to Moon for a while, I was like, wait, why was I listening to her, though? When it comes to improv, like, you have mentioned that you have to, like, really spell out a scene for people to understand what it is that you're talking about.
I just think the simpler the improv scene that you start out with, the better it, like, turns out. I mean, I always tell, like, my students, like, the audience and your scene partner needs to latch on to something. And if they can't, up right up at the top, then your scene's not gonna pan out well. So if you're giving, like, this, like, complex initiation, you want to set up your scene partner and the audience for success. And that doesn't mean, like, boring. It just means, like, like a simple premise. And it could be, like, it could be something that no one's ever thought of.
Yeah. Well, something that this is what I meant to say. When it comes to your sketch writing and you really have to, like, bring it up to, you know, that level that people are going to laugh at it.
Yeah.
It's very similar to, you know, some of the stuff that you've been talking about when it comes to improv. Like, why are you doing this scene? Why is this day unlike the rest?
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm watching, because I think the brain that you use when you're watching and the brain that you use
when you're doing
is very different.
Yeah.
Like, when you're watching, you're like, I could have come up with something better than that. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But then you're up there and you're like, I'm going to throw up because I just missed my chance to get out there with the same character that this guy had.
Right.
And it's so interesting to see that kind of like chaos go through your body.
Yes.
As you learn these beats. But yeah, I think the three beats of comedy is something that I do think about a lot, just in terms of what you taught me. And, you know, hearing you talk about, or just like having you say that about the improv scenes, like, why is this day unlike the others? And then having you kind of bring it into your sketch writing.
Yeah.
It's it just kind of sounds like you are applying a certain part of yourself to everything that you do when it comes to your performing.
Yeah.
And that's very cool.
For sure.
I love that for you.
I mean, it's the same with, like, self-driving car, grandma. Like, it starts out normal, simple. It's an old woman in a self-driving car.
Yeah.
And then how is this day unlike the rest? The car does a hit and run and the grandma's in on it.
Yep.
It's the most simple thing.
It's so...
Like, and then it's an adventure. It's like a hero's journey.
Yeah. Something that I meant to bring up about self-driving Tesla is, with three beats of comedy, it almost seems like self-driving Tesla is like nine beats.
Yeah, you would think so, but honestly, to me, it's three, because it's the adventure to the bridge. The bridge is the climax, and then the bottom of the bridge is the third beat. But if you're looking at it from, like, numbers, it definitely is, like, seven different, like, laugh lines.
Well, I think I more so see it based off of, like, how many times you explain to the audience, like, what it is that you're doing within those moments where it's like, we got to get to the bridge. Here's my 1, 2, 3 lines.
Mm-hmm.
And you're spelling it out for them.
Yeah.
Oh, my old titties. Such a good one.
And, like, beats also, like, beats are different from laugh lines, too. Yeah.
I didn't know
that. Does that make sense?
It does, but I'm like, wow, how, why? I gotta just keep doing it. I'm just gonna keep doing it.
But I know my beats. I know where I need to deliver and land.
Yeah. Those moments where you might know that a beat needs to hit, but you don't have a line, do you just start being you physically? That came out weird, guys.
No, that's a good question. Yeah, I kind of go back to, like, my, like, storytelling side of me. I don't really care about if my lines are, like, funny. I mean, I do care about if my lines are funny. But, like, but that's not the point of the scene. Like, the next line shouldn't be, like, that, oh, I have to be funny right now. It should be, like, how am I servicing this scene? And if I don't know what to say, it's probably because I either, like, don't know who I am, where I am, or what is going on. And I can always add information if I don't know what to say. There's always something to add.
Yeah. I will say, you do a really good job at painting scenes. I think about the scene that you did with Billy at Ranch, and you had to get like a hole in one. You were golfing.
Oh, yeah.
It was like solar panels or something. And
oh, yeah.
I think the suggestion was solar panels, and Kelly just painted out like a mini golf course about like, but she wasn't using like the word like windmill or solar or something.
I think I was trying to get him to guess solar powered windmill.
That's what it was. Yeah. And the way that she set it up for him, like she didn't have to be funny. She was like just naturally funny because of the way that she had to withhold information.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely something that I can attest to that she's saying, but. Guys, Kelly has to go teach a class. I can't keep her here all day.
I gotta teach a class.
She's gotta... she can't just teach
us. I'm a busy woman.
She really is. I've seen it. But, Kelly, thank you so much for coming on today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Heck yeah. For the people that are listening, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Kiki Moonlight, @
Amazing. Amazing. Are you on the TikTok world too?
I am. Yeah. I think on there it's Kelly Moonlight.
Okay. Good to know. Awesome.
I tried Kiki Moonlight, but somebody already took it.
What?
Yeah.
So we should trademark
Kelly Moonlight.
Yeah. Well, this has been such a joy. Thank you so much. I've looked up to you for as long as I've been working at the theater and then getting to learn from you and sitting down here today to chat. It's honestly, it's just been the biggest honor.
The pleasure is all mine, Angela. I look up to you too.
Stop. You're taller than me. We're both the same height. But thank you again. And thanks everybody for joining in today. And looking forward to having you back next time. All right.
Bye.
Bye. What a fun conversation. Fun fact about this episode, we recorded this actually on my birthday, and it was so much fun. I try to make sure that I do something different every year. So to have Kelly come in and just record with me on that day was so genuinely awesome. You know, with all of my crazy career changes and finally getting this podcast out, I've had such a great year. Like, I've had a crazy year, but it's been such a great year. And to start off my 31st year of life with this very talented person, this, you know, just genuine person, meant more than I can ever put into words. So thank you so much, Kelly Moon, for, just being on my podcast and for recording with me on that day. But thank you all so much again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Special thanks to Henry Loveland Nickerson for producing the music. Character bits were done by Jonathan Anderson. You can find Jonathan on Instagram at jonathan.r.anderson_. That is jonathan.r.anderson_. Find out more places to find Kelly, Henry, and Jonathan in the description below. Thank you guys so much again, and we'll see you next time on the Creative Ambitions Podcast.